In this part of the show, we'll be talking with another candidate for Senate, or would-be candidate for Senate here in the state of Illinois. One of the state senators, Republican Peter Fitzgerald, is not running for re-election, so that means we have an open seat. And we also have a very crowded field of candidates, both Democrats and Republicans, who will be competing in the March 16th primary. In fact, if I count right, there's 7 Democrats and 8 Republicans. All of them will, of course, compete in each of the 2 primaries, and then the winner on each side will go on to represent their party in the general election. When we have a run-up to an election like this, a primary general election, we try as much as we can to have candidates on this program to give people who listen the opportunity to not only hear from the candidate, but actually talk with them. Reporters get to do that all the time, so this is your opportunity to actually call in and talk with one of these candidates. And our guest today in this hour of the program is Joyce Washington. She's had a long career in healthcare, both as a provider, as a nurse, and also as an administrator. She has a Bachelor of Science degree in nursing from University of Evansville in Indiana, and has worked as a nurse right out of school. She worked in the emergency room of a large community hospital in Atlanta. During the peak years of the Vietnam War, she was assistant head nurse in the surgical intensive care unit at Walter Reed Military Hospital in Washington, D.C. After that, she went to graduate school and earned a master's of public administration at Indiana State, and then after that has worked in administrative posts at a number of hospitals in the Chicago area. As we talk, you folks who are listening are certainly welcome to call. We just ask people to try to be brief in their questions. We ask that so that we can keep our program moving and try to make the opportunity there for as many people as possible. But certainly anyone who is listening is welcome to call. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So if you're listening in Chicago, around Indiana, anywhere the signal will travel, use that toll-free line. Again, 800-222-9455. And here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Ms. Washington, hello.
Hello.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing great.
Well, we appreciate you giving us some of your time today.
Absolutely, and thanks so much for inviting me on the show. It was great to be in Urbana the other day.
Well, I guess one of the questions, you know, about the candidates is I think all of you all, both Democrats and Republicans, are pretty much Chicago area people. Don't have a whole lot of connections downstate. So you have had the opportunity to at least spend some time outside of the Chicago area.
Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Everybody is from Chicago. And I think people will really look at who's been outside of Chicago a lot. And our campaign certainly has. We certainly think, you know, that Chicago has a lot of numbers, and everybody seems to think that you can get all the numbers there. But I think we're the United States Senate for the entire state of Illinois. And so we have to get out and do more than just Chicago. So we go up and down this state at least probably 1 or 2 times a week, just getting all around the state to meet the people and really doing a national campaign, too. Mm-hmm. We just think that's so very, very important to hear those issues.
Well, it's a big step for someone to become involved in politics at this kind of a level for the first time, that is to run for the Senate. What makes you want to be a senator from Illinois?
Well, let me tell you what, and I love that question because then it gives me the opportunity to talk about what I bring to the Senate. What makes me different than everybody else? Number one, I'm not an insider. I'm not a career politician. I think the issues that we have to deal with, jobs, the economy, homelessness, poverty, health care, education, are issues that, you know, we've been dealing with, the same speeches year after year after year. I think certainly this country needs a new face, and this state really needs a new fighter. And I bring that fighter. The experiences I bring that make me more qualified are, you know, I started off, as you talked about, I started off in healthcare. I've been a nurse, and I've gone up that through that glass ceiling to be a CEO, COO. I've been a vice president. I've already had to manage hundreds of millions of dollars in budgets with a budget deficit of $500 billion coming up. We've got to have somebody who's done it before, not just said, I can do it, but who's balanced budgets and know how to set priorities and do it right. I've already created thousands of jobs, whether I've built hospitals or ambulatory surgery centers or healthcare mega malls of the future, adolescent psychiatric services, therapeutic day schools. I've already created those jobs, and I've already built real community services for people. And that's the experience I bring. On the public side, I started off, I've been a policy advisor for four governors as a member of the Illinois Health Facilities Planning Board. That's a statewide commission where I've had to approve and look at the health care for the whole state. So I know this state, and I know what we need to do as it relates to health. And of course, you know, the other, and also on the private side, I ran 2 years ago for the lieutenant governor. I've already gotten, the political pundit said I'd only get 20,000 votes. I've got 360,000 votes, 360,000 votes in a field of seven opponents. You know what that means. I could easily win this. This race is wide open, and I think the qualifications I bring are the ones that you and your listeners would be demanding of those who say they want to sit in the seat of the Senate.
Well, I'd like to ask you some questions about specific subjects, and again,
absolutely.
People who are listening, they're welcome to call. And perhaps we might start with healthcare, since that is one of the things that's
absolutely
maybe closest to you. Let me ask about the basic issue of what do we do to provide healthcare to those people, and they're estimated to be more than 43 million Americans who don't have health insurance.
You're absolutely right, David, and that's the number one thing. The healthcare issue is the overriding issue is all about cost. It's 14% of our economy, a huge chunk of our economy, and we have little voices. When you look at the Senate and you look at what it needs healthcare voices. We've got one physician on the Republican side with an industry this large, this complex, this much of a crisis in so many people's lives. Tribune just said that it was the number one domestic issue that everybody's dealing with. Then we've got to have more voices. So number one, that's the overriding issue. What's causing that cost to go up? David, you're absolutely right. We've got 43 million Americans who have no health care coverage at all. I always say, David, we can get free health care away to everybody in Iraq. We can build schools for everybody there, but we can't do it in our country. Something's wrong with our priorities. We ought to be able to do it here and cover. And I've got a plan that states, keep it simple, how we can cover everybody here in this country. Pharmaceutical drugs are another issue that's driving up that cost. We've got to have a fighter who understands it, who understands that we can't give these big subsidies back to pharmaceutical companies, HMOs, PPOs. We've got a bid for the lowest price drug. We've got to look at reimportation of drugs from Canada. I think that's a temporary measure because we need to do it here on our soil. Let's cut out some of this marketing and advertising. Let's reduce the price. I don't want to reduce the price of R&D, research and development. We need that. There's been great drugs. And since I've been in this business for the last 25 years, there have been great drugs. We want to do that. But there are some things that we can definitely do to decrease the price of drugs. And then prevention is the other big thing. Our country is fixated on treating the sick. We ought to be fixated on keeping people well. That's much less expensive. If we cover everybody, they don't wait till they get very, very ill and then use our emergency rooms, which are our most expensive form of treatment. We've got to have somebody in the Senate who understands it, who can give everybody access to good care and still don't have these runaway costs. Mm.
Well, specifically, do you think that the government, the federal government, should be doing something to put pressure on the drug manufacturers to hold down the cost of prescription medicine?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we shouldn't be passing bills to help facilitate that. You know, the bill that was just passed, had I been in the Senate, if that was your question, would I have approved it? Absolutely not. I would have fought hard to make sure that that bill was a bill that wouldn't hurt that would not hurt seniors. It should help seniors. There was no provision in there to bid for the lowest price bid. That should never happen. There were provisions in there that we give huge subsidies to pharmaceutical companies, to again HMOs and PPOs. Those kinds of things should not happen. Well, what happens is, you know, we have a president that takes care of the big guys and takes care of the wealthiest, and we forget about those families, working families, who I want to represent, and I want to be there and not give up and not give in till we have a good prescription plan with no gaps that all our seniors and people can use.
And what do you do about all those Americans who don't have health insurance?
I would give them health insurance. I keep this real simple. You know, some of my opponents are talking about a single-payer plan and lots of kinds of, you know, difficult. I think, again, I know this business. We're programs that we already have. All we have to do, David, is expand those programs. The Federal Employee Benefits Program, that's a program that is that all the federal employees are insured by the senators are insured by the House of Representatives. If it's good enough for the senators, it ought to be good enough for anybody else to buy into at a reasonable cost. Let's expand S-CHIPS. That's a program that people are familiar with. That's a program for children. Let's expand that every child in this country ought to have insurance and ought to be able to get care, access to good care. And then there's Medicaid. People understand those. Expand them. Let everybody in. We've covered 43 million people. Are those programs perfect, David? No, they're not perfect. But let's fix them. Let's cover everybody, and let's fix them along the way. And I've got some ideas on how to do that, too.
Well, what would it cost, do you think, to take this 43 million people and put them into the same program that takes care of federal employees?
Oh, but look, absolutely. Let me tell you, would it cost us more? I think not, because what we're going to do is we're going to save it on the back end. They use our most expensive form of treatment, which is our emergency rooms. If we treated people on the front end, we wouldn't have to do it on the back end. And so that's what we're paying for it one way or the other, except we're paying for it much more expensively when we use our emergency rooms and our intensive treatment rooms. Everybody understands that. Now it's a matter of bringing people together, having them understand the intricacies of this and moving forward. I don't think we've had voices. People are ready to do it. I just don't think we've had the experts in the Senate to be able to understand this really complex issue. And that's what I want to go fight for in the Senate.
And you think, at least as a kind of a temporary measure, you would favor Americans being able to buy their prescription medicine from Canada?
You know, absolutely. I led Rod Blagojevich's health transition team. I was on his strategy team, and then he asked me to lead that with Tom Bielenoff, and I did that. A lot of the recommendations that he is following came out of our transition team. Is that a good thing to do right now, because people are in pain right now? Is that a long-term strategy? No. The drug companies are going to give Canada just enough, and we won't have anything to re-import. So we got to work on that problem right here on our soil. But as a temporary measure, when you can get drugs 80% less expensive than they do there, absolutely we should be doing it. I have every respect for the FDA. I wish they could work with us on this and figure out how to do this. But again, I think we should definitely do it as a temporary measure. We should look at the marketing costs and the TV advertising that these drug companies do, which are billions of dollars. Let's cut that out. Let's pass those savings along to the consumer.
We have a caller here to talk with, and I want to make sure that people who are listening know that anybody who is out there who would like to ask their own question can do that. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have the toll-free. That's 800-222-9455. And our guest for this hour of Focus 580 is Joyce Washington. She is one of the Democrats who will be competing in the March 16th primary here in Illinois. And then one of them, the winner of the primary, will go on to represent their party in the general election for the United States Senate from Illinois. We go on here to our caller in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I appreciate Ms. Washington coming, making yourself available to us. Mm-hmm. And also, it's really nice to have a couple of women running.
But I love her comment. You know, they say, the men keep saying they can represent everybody, but I say nobody represents a woman like a woman.
Right. I have a couple of questions about what I consider to be a civil rights issue.
Okay.
I want to know your stand on the House Bill 101, which would extend protections against, for employment and accommodation for lesbians and gays, and also your position on gay marriage.
You know, my position, as I've talked with people around this state, people want the benefits. And I will be the first one. In fact, I work for the company where we had to decide what we were going to do about those benefits. I've been a part of a discriminated group. I don't think there should be any discrimination in any group, and I think we ought to find a way to make sure that people get those benefits, whether it's medical health care, whether it's power of attorney, you know, whether it's, adopting children, whatever the issue is, I think they deserve those benefits. Your second question was about marriage, and I do think, you know, this is a tough fight between the civil component and the religious component. You know, we have all those constituencies. My stand is that reserve that marriage for male and female and have civil unions and give everybody the benefits.
Well, gays are not asking for marriage in the church. They're asking for marriage in a civil setting.
Right, I understand.
And how is giving civil union any different than separate but equal, which Brown versus Board of Education ended, supposedly?
Right. Well, I am definitely for equal. Again, I've been a part of that group. I would do every benefit that I possibly can. In fact, my history says that I've been a part of that. And so there's no question about equal or whether they should be treated differently or anything like that. I would certainly support that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let's go to Sterling, our next caller here on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello, how
yes.
are you?
Good.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you for taking the call. I have just a general comment about all politicians in general, okay? Not directed to you, so please.
I love it, though, because you're probably talking about the career politicians.
But, you know, I hear the same thing. We provide medical coverage for all the people in Iraq. You know we don't provide medical coverage for all the people in Iraq. I hear that drugs in Canada are 80% expensive. I shop for drugs in Canada. You know it's not true. I mean, 80% cheaper. You know it's not true that they're 80% cheaper, and you know that some of the drugs in Canada actually cost us more, and on and on and on. So it is this is the time when politicians put out these sound bites, and I just wonder if most of the people check on these sound bites, because I go to the web, and then I check out these sound bites, and I find out they're not true. So I'm asking you as a politician to be more like a Joe Lieberman. Good old honest Joe Lieberman. I know he didn't get any place, and I know people don't vote for people that are that honest, but somehow work into your political life honesty. But thank you very much for the call.
All right. Well, Ms. Washington, do you want to respond to the call?
I certainly do want to respond to that because, number one, I'm not a career politician. And, number one, all you have to do, all I have is my word, my integrity, and I want to go in to clean up some of the issues that we pick up the paper every other day and see that our politicians are involved in. I did not go into this to not have that integrity and not to have people feel like that everything that I say is not based on research and fact. If he would leave his name, I would certainly send him my research. You know, there's research out there for everything. My research on pharmaceutical medications, 80% less than that you can buy them here. People who have actually gone there, I've been on internet sites. Am I talking about every drug? Absolutely not. I don't think anybody would think I'm talking about every drug. But I can certainly send him my research. I can certainly send him about health care in Iraq. I don't know where he thinks that people are paying or having the money to pay for health care in Iraq. We are giving that. We are building schools over there on our taxpayers' dollars, and we are giving that to the Iraqi citizens free. That is a fact. Now, again, if he leaves his name and his email address or whatever, I can certainly send that to him. And I understand why we're doing it. I don't have a problem. We're over there. I would not have voted to go to Iraq, but we're there now. We've got a mess over there now. We're trying to turn that country back over to the Iraqis, and so we have to change the systems over there from a dictator. I'm saying, though, we've got to take care of home. We've taken care of everybody else, you know, all Iraq and other countries. We've got to take care of home, and we've got to make health care in this country, education in this country, a priority.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit about the economy.
Okay.
Things started last year to look at least a little bit better, although the growth rate of the last quarter of last year was pretty anemic. It was only 4%, and the third quarter was 8.2%.
Right.
And Democrats have been pointing out over and over again how many jobs have been lost since President Bush took office.
That's
now, whether
right.
or not that's his fault or not, you know, maybe that's another question. But it comes down to the basic issue of what can government do, what can the federal government do to stimulate the economy and create jobs? And I think that some people, even some people in politics, if you really pressed them and they were honest, they would kind of throw up their hands and say, well, in fact, there really isn't very much the federal government can do. Do you think that there are things that indeed the federal government can do to stimulate the economy and aid in job creation?
Absolutely. Those that throw up their hands again, I think they're professional politicians who haven't done a lot, you know, when they had opportunities to do it. That's when I think we need a new fighter and somebody else going there to really say, okay, here's some new ideas and some new ways to do it, and we're going to stand up and do it and not give up and not give in until we do it. Certainly, number one, when we're talking about job creation, when you look at, we have lost those 3 million jobs you talked about. 200,000 have been right here in the state of Illinois, high-paying manufacturing jobs. We have got to do something about that to stem that tide. Number one, we've got to look at our trade agreements. You know, they are, they should have worker protection. They should have environmental protections. When we created or developed NAFTA, nobody thought, we knew it was going to be some good and bad. Didn't know it was going to be that much bad. You know, I think because just NAFTA alone, we've lost 500,000 jobs. It's going the wrong way. We've got to look at those protections. We've got to look at trading with countries who are going to have their salaries or, regulations for environmental protections as close to ours as possible. Does that take a little bit longer? Of course, but we can do it if we take that kind of stand. The other thing, while we're doing that, let's look at job creation in this country. Again, this administration has not made job creation a priority. Our infrastructure is crumbling. Why aren't we building roads, bridges, airports, ports? Those are the kinds of things that create, that give jobs to communities, and they are high-paying, not service jobs, that are low-paying jobs. Those are the things I would do. The other thing about this economy, the corporations are getting away with having mailboxes in Bermuda, and we need to close those corporate loopholes. That's $90 billion annually right there that we could add to the economy. The other thing about jobs, as you know, healthcare is my passion. We've got 125,000 job openings right now in healthcare. The average age of a nurse is 46 years old. But I'm talking about technicians. I'm talking about there are a lot of shortages in healthcare. We need to make sure that we train the dollars that the federal government gives to education are putting our youth on a track where there are jobs. And retraining, the federal government gets a lot of money to retrain 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds. We need to make sure the retraining is where the jobs are. You know, by 2015, there are going to be another, you know, 700,000 jobs. So we need, again, to make sure that we fill the jobs that we already have. Those are ways that I would fight this job. The other thing, small businesses. We've got to support small businesses. They don't leave. They're attached to the community. They're committed to the community. They want to stay there. Let's give them some support. Let's help them with health care benefits. Let's help them grow their businesses, thereby hiring and creating jobs and hiring people in the communities.
We have a number of callers here to talk with, and we'll take them in the order they came in, starting with Champagne, line one. Hello.
But I'd like to ask the candidate, where does she think new drugs come from?
I think he said, where do I think new drugs come from?
Yeah, like the United States produces something like 95% of the new drugs put out on the market. We have the safest drugs in the entire world. Canada, on the other hand, doesn't have the regulation that we do of the market. They have subsidized drugs. The reason they're cheaper is because everybody is taxed to pay for your drugs.
Well,
any place in the world that has made it so drug prices were not what they naturally would be has run their own pharmaceutical business out of business. The United States is the only place that comes up with new drugs, something like 95% of them.
And let me answer
your solution.
Let me answer
would
his
cause
question.
Cause us to stop that altogether. You'd spread the poverty instead of spreading the wealth.
Well, let's give the guest a chance to respond.
Let me answer his question. I love to answer his question because I agree with part of what he says. We do, the new drugs come out of here. Our creativity, the most expensive part of the drug is bringing it to market. From R&D, from research and development, to bringing it to market. We bear all of those costs. But why should the American taxpayers, again, and the American public have to subsidize every other country? It's cheaper over there because they don't bear all the costs. So I'm saying, let's let other people bear the costs. Our seniors shouldn't have to pick up all those costs. Drugs, whatever more we pay for them, that's not fair.
But
so let's stop
that.
I don't want to stop anything from research and development. He's absolutely right. I think every penny that goes into research and development should go there. What I want to stop is the marketing and advertising, the expensive television, the $100,000 a day marketing in the Tribune for a one-page ad. Those are the ones I think we could cut down on.
Another industry that you said can't advertise.
Beg your pardon?
There is no other industry on the in the market that can't advertise. You're going to tell them they can't advertise?
No. You know what I would love to tell them? That they need to advertise to the physician. This is a physician. You know, I've been in this business a long time.
You can tell a business what it's
going to do. Sir, it's very difficult if both people are talking at once, and it would help if you – we can have some back and forth, but, you know, give the guest a little room to respond. Ms. Washington?
Thank you. I've been in this business for a long time, and I've seen some absolutely wonderful, wonderful drugs come out. I would never want to stop our research and development. We need to make sure every penny stays there. I do have some concern about marketing and advertising. What happens is we've started advertising to the public. So a woman looks at television, or a man or anybody else, sees this woman floating across the wheat field, goes to the doctor and says, I want that. I want it. And he says, well, no, this is not appropriate for you because of this, and this. I want it anyway. I want to look like that person. You know, I would say let's get medicine back the way it should be. It should be between the physician and the patient, with the physician really going to school with the knowledge and the expertise to say and to evaluate the patient and to say these are the drugs that are needed. Let that marketing be between them. It's much less expensive, and we could make sure that cost got carried on to the consumer, because I think that's what the consumer wants. The consumer wants a cheaper drug.
I think they want drugs that work, and they want...
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about that.
The thing is, we bear all of these costs. That's not true. The companies bear those costs, and if they want their drugs to come to the market quicker, they have to pay for the testing. No other country in the world produces the drugs that we do. No other country in the world allows the people who come up with these drugs to make an unlimited amount of money. Because if you tell somebody that they can't make money on what they think up, they just won't bother. I'm going to hang up now.
All right. Well, I don't know if you want to take that any further, Ms. Washington.
Well, there's no way I want to tell people they can't make a profit. He needs to check the latest profit from pharmaceutical companies. There is no way I'd want to stop that. All I want to stop, and what I think my constituent and what our seniors are doing on fixed incomes, should they have to pay those expensive, very expensive costs. And what people are doing are cutting their pills in half. They're trying to decide whether they're going to pay the rent this month, whether they're going to eat this month, or whether they're going to buy their expensive prescription drugs. That is true. That's not a myth. I don't know what he thinks about that, but that is what is happening. So what happens is Mother Lucy has that stroke, comes into our hospital because she couldn't afford the $117 bottle of high blood pressure medication and uses our emergency room and our intensive treatment unit for 6 days and has got a bill that if we could have figured out how that those drugs could have been cheaper or why she could have paid for it, that would have been an expense we wouldn't have had to, she wouldn't have had to go on through.
We are a little bit past our midpoint, so we got about 25 minutes left. And for the benefit of anybody who might have tuned in, I want to introduce again our guest for this part of Focus. We're talking with Joyce Washington. She is one of seven Democrats that will be competing in the primary here in Illinois on March 16th to represent their party in the general election for the United States Senate. This is the seat that currently is held by Peter Fitzgerald, who is not running again. There are seven Democrats, eight Republicans, and between now and the primary, we will try and have as many of them on this show as we possibly can. So far, I think we've had four of the Democrats and one of the Republicans, and the invitation is out there to candidates, and as I say, we'll get in as many in as we can. Just again, a little bit about Joyce Washington. Her professional life has been in healthcare, both as a nurse and an administrator. She got her nursing degree from University of Evansville in Indiana and worked as a nurse, and then also received a master's in public administration at Indiana State University and has had administrative positions at a number of hospitals in Chicago. Questions are welcome. We'll get back to the phones here, and the next person in line is in Urbana and line two. Hello.
Hi, I just wanted to point out that today is the last day for...
I can't hear her.
Yeah, you're very faint.
Am I speaking loud enough now?
Well, I can hear you. I don't know if the guest can. Go ahead.
I wanted to point out that today is the last day for registering to vote or updating your registration so that you are registered at the place where you currently live.
Oh, all right. That is a good point to make. So if anybody who wants to vote in the primary and if they're not registered, they need to make any changes, this is the day. This is your last day to do it.
How fantastic. I couldn't agree with her more with that kind of push down in Urbana or anywhere. Most Americans don't even participate in this process. People died for people to have the right to vote. And I just think, again, I think it says that the career politicians and those who have been out there before haven't connected with people enough to have them even come out and help participate in this process of electing officials. And I want to change that and send a different face and a different agenda to Washington.
I'd like to tell people how to do this because you can do it in a couple of different ways. And apparently, if things are postmarked today, even if they're not, you don't have to necessarily go to the county clerk's office. It takes some effort to figure out to find these things. You can download a form online. I had to use the search engine Google to find a place that had the motor voter form for first-time registering people or people who have moved to a different county. But you can also, in Champaign County at least, there are a couple of places where you can go and get forms if you're changing your address or if you're registering for the first time. There are two kiosks in Jerry's IGAs in Champaign-Urbana and one at the Illini Union. A number of the libraries you can go and register.
That's right.
And as long as you get this done today and the stuff goes in tomorrow, then you can get that stuff changed. I've worked as an election official, as an election judge, and I'm always amazed at the people who walk in, and they can be any age, and they've moved, and they say, well, doesn't the computer know I've moved? I say, sorry, no, it's not Big Brother yet. And people also don't seem to realize sometimes that the reason you need to be registered at the address where you currently live is that there are a lot of geographic boundaries that vary for the office, and they're tied to where you live.
That's right.
So you can't live in Urbana and vote for somebody who represents a different district in Pelono or Champaign County or Champaign City. It just depends on how the lines are drawn for each office. So it's important to update your registration each time you move.
All right.
I wanted to, about the previous caller, the drug companies make an 18% profit on their businesses, and that's a huge profit.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly seems to me that if there was that there is plenty of room for cutting some of their tax deductible expenses, like all this recent. And it didn't used to be that drug companies advertised it to individuals.
That's right.
that there'd be plenty of room for cutting the prices of drugs. You know, it's fine if there's new drugs, but, you know, if people can't even afford the ones that are currently available and doing things, and we're not just talking about elders, we're talking about all kinds of people who don't have
right.
drug coverage and insurance. I know people who can't afford to buy the drugs that are available now.
That's right.
And we are paying through the nose to treat those people, as you say, later on when they become more sick and walk into the emergency room. So it's you either pay now or you pay later, and you lose people. We're losing like 18,000 people a year who die because they don't have any kind of health coverage. Thanks a bunch.
Right, absolutely. She's absolutely right.
All right. Well, let's go on to another caller. This is also someone in Urbana, and it's line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was hoping that Ms. Washington could discuss environmental issues a little bit. I know that they are very important to voters, but they seem to have been largely ignored in the Democratic primary. I was hoping you could talk about what environmental issues are important to you and what types of environmental legislation you would introduce if you're elected to the Senate, and I'll hang up and listen.
All right.
Sure.
Thank you.
You know, and we certainly have not ignored environmental issues because, again, I think this president has certainly been very anti-environmental and anti-healthcare and anti-education. And I think we've really got to, I do think we've got to set some priorities. And when I talk about healthcare, you can't help but talk about environmental issues. When you look at the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act, those protections, the mercury in our water that's really affecting pregnant women and children, we need to have some serious concerns because, again, all that does is drive up the healthcare costs. We have to roll. We can't let those protections continue to be rolled back as it is under this administration. When we look at where we put toxic waste, a lot of times it's in very poor neighborhoods. We have to be very, very concerned about that. Why do we have healthcare problems, particularly asthma and respiratory issues? Because it's so much more prevalent in poor communities and some of those high minority communities because that's what we do with our environment. We have to be concerned about it because, again, it drives up the healthcare costs. It makes certainly doesn't have the highest quality of life for people, and we've got to be very, very concerned about that. We've got to be, you know, I don't know. So as it comes to health, I'm very concerned. As it comes to drilling, you know, I think we need to, you know, keep our areas as pristine as we possibly can. We don't need to be drilling. What we do need to be doing, though, is making sure that our energy bills contain bills that lessen our dependence on foreign oil. We need to take that very, very seriously, how we bake our cars and what we do about those elements of our society that we can control to lessen that dependence.
All right, let's go to Chicago, line number 4. Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. I guess. I want to bring to your attention some information about the cost of research on drugs, which weren't mentioned earlier, and this may be for the benefit of the ditto head who exchanged remarks with you earlier. That is that the cost of research and drugs, over half of that is paid for by government funds through the National Institute of Health and also by nonprofit organizations like universities.
You are absolutely right, the National Institute of Health. That's absolutely right. So people pay for it twice. I mean, that's a real argument there. We're already paying for it through our taxes, and then you pay for the drug. And so that's just not fair.
The next thing is that over half of the money that the drug companies charge off to research and development is actually advertising and not for research.
That's right.
And therefore, you pay for something that's basically waste.
Okay. Hello? Well, yeah, we got you.
Okay. One more thing. I want to indicate, I want to mention an experience that I had about a month ago for myself to indicate how the cost of drugs are raised by industry. Mm-hmm. I was prescribed a purgative a while ago to be used prior to an examination, and went into Walgreens and priced it out, found it cost $45. I went to my neighborhood pharmacist. He suggested a substitute which was just as effective and as good. He checked. He knew that because of his this was on a list of approved drugs, mm-hmm. and I paid $5 for this stuff. Same thing, same effect.
That's right.
Nine times as much for the prescription drugs, that is, with a name brand, which goes mainly for the profit of the drug companies, and as opposed to this other thing that I had to pay. And this is the way drug prices are driven up in general.
That's right. You're absolutely right. Generics are just as good. The big pharmaceutical companies really fight to extend their patents longer, and so the generics don't come to market. Those could be a lot cheaper for people. And again, that's another thing we've got to do to make sure generics come much, much faster than they do to the market now. It's because we've got big pharmaceutical drug lobbyists that really keep that from doing. But we've got to have somebody bold enough to take on the pharmaceutical companies, and that's what I'm going to do.
About 10 minutes left, less than that probably, with a Democratic candidate for Senate, U.S. Senate from Illinois, Joyce Washington. We have two other callers. We'll see if we can get them both in. Champagne, line one, we'll go there. Hello.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to respond also to the gentleman that called earlier. And I keep coming back to this article in Time Magazine, February 2nd, by two reporters, Donald Bartlett and James Steele. And they make the point, I mean, I'll just quote it real briefly, just that each year an estimated 50,000 to 100,000 people die as a result from adverse reactions from FDA-sanctioned drugs sold in America. And in another paragraph, while the FDA and the drug industry have talked at length about the threat posed by drugs brought in from Canada, what they neglect to mention is that prescription drugs bought by Americans increasingly are produced in foreign countries with minimal FDA oversight and then shipped to the U.S. And in 2002, pharmaceutical imports to the U.S. totaled $40.7 billion. That's nearly a fivefold. You know, I can just go on and on with this article, but the gentleman that called you earlier and just, you know, I thought gave you an unnecessarily rough time. I think you should read this article.
I appreciate that. He's got it all right there.
Well, thanks for the call. Let's go on to line number two. This is a caller in Urbana. Hello.
Yeah, I too am against that caller, and I think if you want to find a group with an interest in keeping us from having a health care oriented toward prevention, it's that group that he comes from. But I wanted to ask you, since you like the health care issue, I think the biggest problem is going to be that the issue with long-term care for our seniors, and in particular, I've heard figures like as many as 15 million people are going to have Alzheimer's in the next 20 years, I think it is. What thoughts do you have about that? And I'll hang up. Thanks.
Thank you so much for the question, because it's one of the things that I think it's so very important. I still think it goes back to prevention and keeping people healthy. We are going to live longer. The fastest growing segment of our population is the over 100 year olds. And we have to make sure that we take care of our bodies a lot different than we're taking care of them now. Both my parents are in their 80s. My mom is about 80, and my dad's already in his 80s. They work out. They at a fitness club, work out 3 days a week. We're going to have the mentality that people need to take care of themselves a lot longer. And because people don't want to just languish in nursing homes. That's not what long-term care should be about. It should be about people living as long as they can, as healthy as they can. Then when they need to, I think we're going to have to look at some assisted living and what I call kind of the healthcare mega mall of the future. And I think what it does is it really clusters healthcare where each stage that you need, it's there in some kind of cluster where you can move easily to that. And it needs to be in a much more dignified manner. manner. Some of them, it's very, very, some of them are very, very good, and they're nice clusters. But some, we've got a long way to go, and we've got to hurry up and get there when it comes to a major emphasis on long-term care. As I said, the average age of a nurse is 46. When the baby boomers come, you know, it's going to be a real, real crisis. That's why I think we need healthcare voices in our legislative bodies. We haven't had them before. We have lots of attorneys, lots of businessmen, but we need some folks who understand healthcare, who are going to tackle huge issues like long-term care. We've got to create our nursing homes to be a lot different, the majority of them, than they are now, and that means some funding to help make that work.
We have someone here on a cell phone on our line 4. We'll get right there. Hello.
Hello, are you there?
Yes.
I had called in earlier, and then I got your guest there responded with a question, but by that time my cell phone was disconnected. We were talking about drugs in Canada, if you remember, 85% cost. And I mentioned that I buy drugs and I do order up in Canada. And we should talk more about this misunderstanding about drugs in Canada. And as I said, they're not 85% cheaper. Some drugs cost more. But as your caller called in recently, the caller said he went to Walgreens, and the Walgreens pharmacist told him he could buy something for $5, which was much more. This markup is occurring on the wholesale and retail level. I mean, I am also an investor, and I invest in drug companies, and I visit drug companies, and I'm very interested in this drug problem. And what I found was that the drugs which are made in Canada, for example, I invest in a company up in Canada that manufactures many U.S. drugs, U.S. drug companies, and those drugs are shipped down here. Those drugs, they charge the same whether they sell them to Walgreens, whether they sell them to Walmart, whether they sell them to Caremark, which is a wholesale house. You pay a different price. Now, it's easy to beat up on the drug companies, and everybody wants to exclude the fact that the markup is occurring in the wholesale retail level. Additionally, in drugs in Canada, the Canadian government subsidizes many of those drugs. When you see a Canadian person buying a drug extremely cheap, he's buying with Canadian tax dollars. As a result, Canadian citizens are not happy about U.S. citizens taking advantage of their drug system. Because if you talk to Canadians, and including the Canadian government, they don't want us buying their drugs, do they? Are you guys with me on this?
Yeah, sure. Well, again, we're getting really short
Canada,
on time, but I want to...
One last point.
David, I just want to... Can I just respond
no,
real quickly?
Let me give the caller a chance real quick.
The Canada is only one-fifth our size, and we put a burden upon their government subsidizing their drugs when we pull them in, so you know what's going to happen if we begin trying to take advantage of their system. So, okay, your turn. Go ahead.
All right, go ahead.
You know what? I'm going to agree with him because all he really is arguing is where the increase is in the chain. All we're saying, though, when it gets to the senior citizen, when it gets to anybody else who uses expensive prescription drug, it's higher in this country, whether it's Walgreens or anywhere, a hospital, anywhere else, than it is in the other countries, and because we subsidize so much of those costs. I just think we've got to have everybody at the table. We've got to sit down. A lot of these corporations, and not all of them, but a lot of times it's just profit and greed. I think everybody should make a fair profit, but it shouldn't be at the expense of our seniors who are on fixed incomes and other people who need those drugs. You know, I am a fighter for the working family. I think those people need a fight. Somebody opponents tell them, well, they have the big people. Well, they can buy those drugs and not be a problem. Rich people can do all kinds of things, buy good schools. What we need is a fighter for American working families and low income that can't buy those drugs, and we need to make sure that there's some relief for them. Those are the people I want to fight for.
We're going to have to stop, I'm sorry to say. I'm sure we could keep going, but we've simply used our time. For people who are interested, since we've really only talked about a couple of things, if you'd like to know more about Joyce Washington, she does have a website with some issue information on there. In fact, I believe all of the candidates, all the Democrats, all the Republicans do all have websites. So if you have internet access, I know not everybody does, but if you do, you can go and you can read up on the candidates then.
David, do I have time to give mine real quick?
Sure.
www.washington4, and that's spelled F-O-R-U-S-C-T-O-N Senate, S-E-N-A-T-E, one word, .com. I'd love for people to go to my website.
Well, Ms. Washington, thanks very much.
And I'd love to have their support on the 16th. And thank you very much, David.
Sure thing.
I really did enjoy your show
very good.
All your wonderful questions. Take care.
Our guest, Joyce Washington, she is one of seven Democrats that will compete in the primary here in the state of Illinois March 16th, and then one of them will go on to represent their party in the general election, running for that seat that's now occupied by Pete Fitzgerald.